I'm Mariam Issa.
Mariam, essentially, like, giving you the premise to these conversations are just open, vulnerable. I suppose allowing ourselves an environment where we can share our lives in a real way. You know what it's all about. But then you said that David White quote. So what was you saying about that?
I love that. I love the poet David White.
Yeah.
And he mentions, like, when you told me about the conversation we're going to have, he says this is the conversational nature of reality.
Okay.
So, and what is reality, you know?
Yeah.
We make our own realities, but there's so many, things that are connected to this reality. For instance, you and I are having conversation here right now, but there's also technology involved. There's also the intangible energy that is involved. And so it is a conversation that is happening partly our stories, but also partly involved in the people who brought this technology to life. Yes. So it's not just you and I. It goes beyond that. And we're also communicating with others outside of this room. So it's fascinating.
Isn't it?
And amazing.
And even like what you're saying, just the taking the time to acknowledge the extended things, the engineering that's come to be around us. You know, I suppose, is that part of your history and culture in Africa, is the acknowledging your environment, or where does that come from in you? Is that something, you know?
Yeah, I guess it's about grace. It's about appreciation for life. And so much at looking what is working for us, what we have, what we can focus on and love, even when we think that our light is in the dark. Like I love the moon, and you know how the moon goes into the cloud.
Yeah.
But it's the cloud that gives it that darkness, but the moon still shines. And I think as human beings, we have that light, but we do go through dark clouds at times.
Yeah.
And those dark clouds should not be what, defines us. We should always know that we're the light.
Yes.
That we can come out of this darkness.
Because it's sometimes troubling and all-consuming when we go through darkness, because it feels like it engrosses us. But if you remember that as an analogy is perfect, because you remain the light, you remain your deepest essence is shining.
It's always shining.
Is that like intuitive discovery you found over the years, or is that something you were taught?
I think it's an intuition that lives in all of us.
Yes.
But because of the amount of noise that is around us, we very rarely discover this. Or the amount of conditioning that happens around us through our communal space, conditioning through our school environments and all that, we have sort of forgotten our true essence. But I think what reminded me of this is the fact that when I was fleeing Somalia with two young children, I was about 23 years of age at the time.
Right.
And I was in a small boat, and I don't even know if it was, it could be categorized as a boat in Australian sense, because it just was something that held 140 people in it who were fleeing a war.
How big was it?
It was really small. It was small, but it held this mass of people. And around that time, during the day, you could feel the turmoil, you could hear the noise, you could feel the uncertainties within people. But when night came and everyone went to sleep, there was this conversation, as I was talking about David White's poem before, between myself and the silence and the sky that was so open, and being suspended in the middle of an ocean, plenty of water around us, and not being certain of how things are going to go.
So vulnerable.
So vulnerable.
Massive ocean.
Yeah, it is. And yet there was something in me that knew that everything was all right, because I could see the stars. I've never seen the stars that close.
And I bet they were so bright, because there's no other.
So bright. And it was so, like, it was a moment of freeing, in a sense. Like you, it was caged, but also freeing. So it was incredible. I could not see that in the day, because in the day there was the fears and the cries of children and the hunger, and there was no water. Even we didn't have drinking water, being amidst of, you know, an ocean that was all water. So when I look back at that time, I feel like there's so much that we are than what we categorize ourselves to be.
Oh man.
And, yeah.
You saw so clearly. Like it's a direct experience with and what do you term it? God or the ether or the universe or divine?
Yeah, as a Muslim I termed it as God, as Allah, as you know, the source of all that is.
Mm.
Because that's what God is for us, the source that we all come from and everything comes from. But I think it's just, it's within us, you know, and it's so interconnected that when you get a spaces, moments like that, moments when you're so vulnerable and you feel that you need help, those are the moments that we open up and we know that this essence is not even outside of us. It lives in us.
Oh, we're so of it. That's what's like. We're not like aliens that plonked into this universe.
No.
we're like we created of it. We are of it.
We are of it. We are of it. So we do get glimpses of that.
It's an amazing story, that is. Mm. Honestly, that's just like, like, I can't even comprehend what that direct experience would have been like for you.
Yeah.
Because I haven't experienced it. Like, I've experienced my own darkness in my own ways.
Yes.
And I can definitely relate to the nature of, you know, coming close to source or God and having a direct experience with that energy. Like,
yeah.
But not in that. That's a tremendously powerful way. Like, was it a click moment or was it a... You know, talking about that moment specifically when you're on that boat.
Well, at that moment, I think for me it was about I didn't have my husband with me, and I was going through a lot of fear, and it was fear of many things.
Mm.
It was a fear of fleeing a war and going into the unknown. It was sort of having a conversation with something that I have never experience, and I was only 23 years of age.
And two children.
Yeah, and two children.
With you.
Yes, yeah. My oldest was 3 and my youngest 2.
Mm.
And I was having a turmoil in the sense that even my younger child was having diarrhea and he might have died. So there's all these things going in our head. What if my child dies? What am I going to do with the body? Am I going to throw it off over the ocean? Should I take it back home? Because for me, I was going to Kenya at that time, and I grew up in Kenya. And so there were so many things, so many challenges in that short 3 days. And it was 3 days that the journey from Somalia to Kenya.
Right.
And we weren't even sure if we were going to make it. But I think it is a time where you only hold the conversation that you want to hear.
Right.
And there's no room for doubt. And it's like, I'm going to make it and I'm going to get there. So I think this moment was a time when I was exposed into visionary storytelling. So you tell the vision of the story you see.
Ah.
Of course we're going to make it. Of course I see the harbor in Mombasa. I know it so well. And it's just like you tunnel your focus on that.
That's powerful. And that's what we're so intelligent beings to be able to do that. Like,
yes, imagination.
Yeah. But you're unique in the way that you did that and chose that. I'm interested in why you created that vision in your head, because some people just don't. They despair and they get swallowed by the darkness, but you found the light in the darkness. And was that because you, going into the situation, you had this faith, or what was it?
Yeah, I had faith, and I was always a spiritual, even as a young child.
Right.
I was very curious. I wanted to know more. Like, even when I was having that conversation with God and looking at the stars and all that, there was a part of me that was really curious. What if God just talks to you, like, you know? And so I think my childhood fantasies, and I was a reader as well, so I read a lot of books, and I knew what it was like to imagine. And, you know, when you're reading a good book, you always go to the spaces that the writer talks about, and you look at these people or the characters in the story, and you imagine them and all that. So I think the advantage for me was because of that, being a reader, being curious, wanting to, and also being a spiritual person. I learned the Quran myself, and I knew how to, I used to translate it to my advantage.
Right.
Like, you know, when the religious clergyman would tell us something about a certain chapter or a certain verse, I would go, yeah, but this is how it interprets for me.
Right.
Yep. So making it uniquely for myself.
Well, that's a really interesting area in itself, like, because I've heard, like, Tom Knowles, who's a teacher of meditation and from the Vedic lineage, he knows Sanskrit really well, and he looked back at the Buddhist texts and noticed the discrepancy in how they interpreted the Sanskrit, which was one of desire is the source of all suffering, but it actually said self-authorized desire is the source of all suffering, which is a massive difference, because that's like, you know, self-authorized is more like essentially selfish, but then nature's desire is actually really good to learn how to, it's your heart's desire.
Yeah.
You know, and Buddhism kind of is all about renunciation of desire in its purest sense, and he pointed out a slight, anyway, it's just interesting. I think it is what it is, but it's just interesting to be able to discern the truth in scriptures or texts.
Scriptures. And also to make it familiar to your needs. Because for me, like, Muhammad is the channeler of Quran. And for him, you know, being in that century, what he felt or what it meant for him cannot specifically mean that it would mean the same for me.
Right.
So it has to have that timely element, which, you know, and it's also uniquely to individuals, you know, what I'm going through and my perceptions might not be the same as what someone else is going through that. And it's so incredible, because I knew that as a young, you know, child growing up in Kenya. And I think when we grow up in nature, because I grew up in nature, my mother was she loved nature. She took us to walks early mornings to the ocean, because she was a craftswoman, and she used to get her material from the ocean.
Oh,
because
right.
she used to create mats and baskets and things like that. So the material just grew on outside of the ocean and all that. So we used to walk in oceans, and then we had food forests in Malindi. And I grew up with the native people in Malindi called the Giriamas. And they were the indigenous people of the land. And so all these things, I think, combined my connection with God more. And I think we have sort of lost that now, because we're not connected with the elements, with, you know, the vastness of the whole of the cosmos.
It's so powerful what you're saying. Like, what jumps out the most in that last little bit of what you're saying is that primarily it seems your connection with nature and the intelligence of nature and the way nature works and the way you observe nature working is kind of like the blueprint for how we work in a way, you know, like there's all these similarities. And I love your interpretation of scriptures as well, because I think it's very smart from my perspective. You can discern what's real for Muhammad in his day and what's real for you in your day.
In my day, yes.
And the even recognizing and acknowledging the difference in that itself is smarter than just grabbing text. And just to speak to that for a moment, because there is a bit of, in some religion, or there can be a tendency to cling to an ideology or an element of it without understanding. And I'd love to hear what your perspective is on the difference there.
You know, it's so incredible when the Quran, when the verses, when you read the verses of the Quran, it talks a lot about contemplation.
Okay.
And God talks about, you know, I am talking to ulil albab, you know, the people of understanding, the people of openness.
Right.
So, yeah, and this verses is not for everyone. It's for the people who take it on and feel and hear what it is about. So the same verse of the Quran will not, and you talked about the analogy of Muhammad being in a past time and me being here now, but it's also the fact that that same ayah that last year I interpreted it a certain way may not necessarily be interpreted in the same way this year.
Right.
Because I have grown.
Yeah.
I have come through different, you know. So it's so timely. You have to make it so timely. And I think it's not only the Quran, but it's everything in our lives. And we are evolutionary beings, and we're growing every day. Mm. And people tell you, oh my God, you've changed. You never used to be like this. Of course I have changed, you know. And it should be in a good way that we should accept that change.
Yeah.
But if you look at it, Jeremy, we're so scared of change. Whereas look at ourselves, look at where we started from as a baby to where we are. We look ourselves in the mirror every day changing, and yet when our circumstances change, we're so afraid of this change. So I feel like, and the Quran says, the world is a play and an illusion.
The wild, the wilderness.
The world that live in,
yeah, yeah,
is a place of illusion and play.
Right.
You know? And Shakespeare sort of says the same thing. It's a space of play. So if we can learn to play more,
yeah,
and go back to our originality, because we're supposed to be happy and playing and joyful instead of just being weighed down by things that we cannot overcome sometimes.
Mm.
And those things are our own creation.
Yeah,
so when we contemplate on it, we know why we created a certain thing. But sometimes I think we sort of don't want to be held accountable. We don't want to be, you know, accountable or responsible for our own actions.
100%.
Yeah.
And I reckon that's what you hit on then is just punctuates the problem, really,
yeah,
is that people aren't taking responsibility
for
their own convictions, or they're not being true to their ability to respond in a situation.
No.
You know, the things that you speak of that are really disconnecting us and severing our connection to one another and nature and everything are real energies that I can manifest in myself. And so therefore I can understand why greedy people manifested them, because I've got the ability to do the same. So
absolutely.
So I suppose it's having that awareness of, and knowing that, what's my responsibility to the situation now, you know? And I think what for you, or what have you observed to be useful golden sequences to, like a sequence of unlocking or seeing like that?
Well, I have so many experiences. I have been through 2 civil wars. I've been through the Somali civil war, but I've also been the Ugandan civil war, the time of Idi Amin. We used to live in Uganda at the time. And so I've seen people fleeing for their lives. I've over the years, when I came to Australia, I really, first I want to say that I love this country. Like it's I feel like reborn in Australia,
really?
And I feel like reincarnated in my body once again, because I have had the time to contemplate, to look back, and to feel why is there such a desperation in back home, and, you know, destruction. And why did we come to this space, especially Somalia? I am from Somalia. We are an oral nation, and a nation, we used to be a nation of poets who, you know, loved words. I still do. And we are, you know, really beautiful storytellers when you look back in our history. And looking at that storytelling and the way we storytell and the way we use words, I think is really powerful. Mm. First, I realized, like, in my time of, you know, growing up, it started to become a shaming culture, a culture where, as a woman especially, you know, as a woman, you're not valued. And you are shamed, and there were certain things that, you know, in the culture. For instance, FGM, you know, the which happened to young girls, to be, you know, that culture in itself tells you so much about a people.
What's FGM?
FGM is female mutilation. And it's horrible culture, but it tells you a story about the people who practice it. First, it's an element of fear that, you know, the girl will bring a dishonor to the family. And the second thing, it is a culture that is so archaic and still happening until now. And so there are so many things, and there are so many reasons why it kept happening. So looking back and contemplating on things like that have given me an insight into what our culture is more about.
Mm.
And I've realized it was more held in fear, you know, and a fear of women to be a certain way. And of course, when women, the 50% or maybe even 60% of a whole population, is, you know, taken out of context and is not in the decision-making tables, what do you expect for that country to come out of? So there is a big imbalance in that.
And is the fear grounded in anything? Is it still a religious grounded fear, or is it purely, you
know? Absolutely not religious, because this practice happens in many countries in Africa.
Yeah.
So it is a fear of, you know, women not standing up their voices.
But they're not rooted into anything other than, I think this is the way myself.
This is the way. And of course, the mothers who do it. Mothers are the most compassionate and the most beautiful beings in human beings. But when she does something like that to her 4-year-old or her child, I mean, it will have a trauma on her.
Oh.
And so we have carried this trauma. And of course, when we have children, it comes through the DNA, and we have this fear ingrained in us. So through my adversity, this is one thing that I've learned, that, there is something, there is a blueprint in me that is so fearful.
Right.
And if I can only get to that. And so for myself, I started decoding what that fear is, and where it's come from.
How would we really started doing that?
I started doing that through contemplation, through nature.
Yeah.
You know, and I started healing myself through writing. I kept a journal, and I started writing. I wrote to everyone. I wrote to my mother. I wrote to my father. I wrote to my brothers and my sisters and everybody that I felt needed to listen to me. And although I did not send those letters, but they sort of, you know, healed me because I went back in time. And this is the thing that we know for sure, we can travel back in time in our own minds and we can go and sit down with the injured selves of us, you know, children, and go back there and say, it's okay.
Yes.
I got you back now. I am the one who is, you know. And that came to me through vision, and through contemplation, through meditation. And now I love all religions, but what I don't like is the dogma about religion and how other people want to use their power and controlling over these words that could support and could heal humanity.
You've hit something that's like really deep in me, like, because I grew up Christian, and that's one thing that is really hits me is almost a how dare you. it's essentially using the name of love for control and reasons. Yeah. And I felt immense pain because I've realized that it was tremendously conditional love.
Yes.
And that was hurtful to realize, you know, and then there's the people that aren't religious, which is like, you know, more than 50% of the world is religious or has a religion or a faith. but those that aren't have a tendency to judge religion and faith and spirituality from that of saying it's of control, because some, or maybe a lot of it is, it's not really rooted or humbly grounded in the beauty and intelligence of love, which I believe all religions intended to be. Yeah,
yeah, they're not just intended, they are. Like, they, if you are, really right. listen to the scriptures, okay. they're so powerful and they're so beautiful, because these are teachers that are talking to us, teachers like Jesus and teachers like Muhammad and people who felt like, you know, who are just like us. And unfortunately, what we do as human beings, when things like that come for to us, we put those people in pedestals.
Okay.
And we say, oh, they're untouched, we cannot reach them. We cannot be like them.
Yeah. And almost worship them.
And worship them. Or just, you know, put them in that space where, you know, we're just...
They're not brothers.
Yeah,
and
we're not. Yeah. Whereas they've come to teach us that they're among us, that they've come to teach. And it's exactly what you and I are doing here, sharing our love, sharing our story. And sharing it with others so that they can be touched in some ways. So this is all it's always been. It's always been about sharing a story. And while, you know, we all meditate, we all have our aha moments. And when we get those aha moments, those are the times when we want to share it with the world. Oh my God, you know, this is what I discovered.
And so true.
Yeah, it's so powerful, isn't
it?
When someone tells you about that, and then you take it on board, and then you get your aha moment. So it's always been that. But I love, you know, there's this organized religions, but there's also the African way. You know, I've lived with African native people who just, you know, were pagans, but had a religion in that in itself by just connection. They just knew that they were connected to the earth and all that. And the word Ubuntu from the Zulu culture says that it knew so much about the human that it knew that it wasn't, I'm not human without you. I am because you are. If there is no me, there is no you. That's just that just one word says that. So it puts us together in the humanity. I'm not a man, I'm not a woman, I'm just you.
Yeah.
In me. And
if that's, if that, because that is the truth.
It
and,
is.
And if that is the truth, then there can only be kindness.
Yeah. Because you would never do something, you know, you would never want to harm anyone else. But look at it this way. The worst harming or the worst bad things today come from ourselves.
That's true.
We are, you know, very unkind to ourselves.
More men kill themselves than each other.
Yes. So the thoughts are thought. If you just process your thought every day, you will see how unkind you are to yourself. There are things that go in your mind that sometimes you cannot even tell to the other. So the number one thing that we have is that self. We've lost our self-worth. We don't feel that we're worthy of love. And that's because there's so much shame ingrained in us. There's so much things that we've been bombarded with. Look at all the billboards and look at all the advertisements and look at all the marketing stuff. It's like only celebrities are not, you know, worthy of living in these big, beautiful castles and home and all that. And I want to be like that. So I'm living not even my life, but someone else's. And it's
always been that way, though, with like kings and royalty and anyone that runs a village. There's always been someone that we have a tendency or a desire to create, to look up to. Why?
And they've created this through storytelling.
Yeah.
It's the power. It's the love for power. Like when two people come into a building, if they're not both authentically connected with themselves, there'll be a power play. Like, what am I going to tell Jeremy? And how can he see? You know, there's all these voices. And that's what, we cannot live with that anymore, because now we're awakening. But not only ourselves, the earth itself is awakening. And the earth is moving.
That's cool.
Towards, you know, and it said, no more, I cannot take this anymore. And in the Quran, there's this beautiful surah that talks about, you know, when the time, إِذَا زُلْزِلَتِ الْأَرْضُ زِلْزَالَهَا, when that awakening and shift of the earth happens, you know, and the people are scattered around.
Mm.
And this is, you know, at the earth will then tell its story.
Right, and you feel like that's beginning to happen now.
It is already.
Well, it is, with people embodying what it feels like to be the earth getting hurt.
Yeah, and the earth getting hurt. The young people are poets who are talking on behalf of the earth. It is the earth telling us through, you know, climate change. It is, we're just delusional. We don't want to hear. There's so much that is communicating to us. Young children coming with their talent intact, showing us the possibility. Because every child that is born is here to remind us what we've lost.
Yeah.
Our innocence, you know, the beauty. Whenever you hold a young child or an animal, or you feel who you are, you feel who you are. So that love is everywhere. It's within us. It's everywhere. And it just, we need to focus it on each other.
Yeah. And so you feel like through community and grassroots connection with your people around you is the most effective way to aliven and create that. Because I suppose that, for example, I work in videos and media, and so I suppose that's a way I'm trying to connect with people. But, you know, the internet is neutrally, it doesn't have a preference. It just is what it is. We created it. It's a technology that is what it is. We want to connect. But we can either use it for good or we use it for bad. Or, you know, use it for creative purposes or use it for destructive purposes. And so I think it's a relevant tool of our time to be able to use it for good purposes.
I think technology is just like our mind, you know, our mind and the universe. It's a gadget that is actually defining and telling us what are the capability of our mind and what the possibilities are when we open up to the universe and how we can, you know, literally connect with it. So it's got a pulse and it's got a heart.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's amazing and incredible things that you can do with technology. But it can be as destructive as well, just like what the mind can be sometimes, you know. And it's, for me, literally, I think that with the way technology is going, I think our minds are also, you know, our consciousness is also elevating in that way as well. We're becoming more humane, I think. Although, you know, in other instances, if you look at other things, you think that, oh, the, you know, humanity is in a big destruction. But I think with all this chaos that is happening, is opening up our hearts with people like refugees and asylum seekers coming to this country. They're here to remind us of what we've forgotten about ourselves. And I say that in as in a past, but I have come myself as a refugee, and that was 18 years ago. I don't think I embody that name anymore. Although we love naming things and we love putting people with labels and all that. But what I realized actually is, like, living in a communal culture, you live in dependency. You depend on each other, which is an incredible thing.
But you've beautifully allowed yourself, like a flower, to be that in your community by opening your garden and opening your home.
Yeah.
And not everyone does that. Can you talk about that?
But I realized that was my calling.
Right.
Like, when I came and having understood about that communal culture, it also disempowers you because you don't know who you are.
Okay.
You don't know the an individual aspect of yourself. And so I learned the individual aspect of myself through this culture that I've come into. And that was their gift to me, you know. So seeing a woman outside of my window, a Western woman in Lycra, you know, pushing a pram with one hand and, you know, the leash of a dog in another hand and just running and exercising that early morning with perfect makeup on her face, you know. She was sort of giving me that invitation slip and going, you know what, this is possible. And so I was like, wow, how does she do that? So for me, it was a way...
Curiosity,
yeah. And also it was a way of learning my... She's so independent.
Yeah.
You know, how did she do that?
Yeah.
So it was... And I didn't think it was possible for me at that time. And, you know, looking at that, I realized the possibility. And then looking at also her in every aspect of her life. Like, she's the doctor I visited. She's the teacher of my children. She was everywhere in administration. And to me, it was like, whoa, you know, how I want this. And that's where desire comes in. You know, we have these desires of actualizing, being our...
And your desire essentially... self. Yeah, your independent, that's what
to be our independent selves, you know, to be able to earn our part in life.
Mm.
And so once I learned that and I knew that was what I was here to remember, then interacting with individuals also taught me and I saw how void it was of the dependence culture. My. Where, yes, I have this, but... I need to share it with others. There wasn't that. And so dependency on its own doesn't work. And neither does independence on its own.
Okay.
But when we put it together, we have dependence and independence, and it becomes the interdependence, which is where we self-actualize, where we find ourselves.
Really cool.
Yeah, where we find that I am here to, you know, define myself or to see myself as family beyond human relations, beyond family,
right?
Beyond blood.
Yeah, yeah.
That my next door neighbor is my family.
Yeah.
That I can take care of them if they need me. That I can, you know, so...
Man, I want to be your neighbor.
Not that I do, but, you know, it's, yeah. So we're here to define ourselves in the relationship of being family once more, that extended family of humanity.
Mm.
I think we just talk about it and it becomes, we call words cliches because we talk about them when we don't mean them.
Mm.
So we've taken the spirit out of words.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But when you... breathe in the spirit again into words. They're not cliche.
Yeah, well, perfect. Yeah. That's a great example. So if anyone ever says that's a cliche, it's because they've sucked the spirit
because
out of it.
Because they've sucked the spirit out of it. You know, when I was writing my book, A Resilient Life, I was I talked with my niece, who was a beautiful writer, and I said, you know, I had a line there that said, you know, it takes a whole village to raise a child.
Yeah.
And my niece went, oh, that's so cliche, auntie. I said, yes, because only the spirit has been sucked out of it, but we can breathe in. Because that's a beautiful analogy. It takes a whole village to raise a child.
Yeah.
But I add to this, and I have added over the years to this proverb that when you nurture the woman, you nurture the village.
Mm.
You know? And in our African cultures, we need to nurture the woman. Not only Africa, but around the world. We need to nurture the woman so that we can nurture our villages.
Man, I hear that. I feel. I really have a sense when I shut my eyes or when I stop to think or stop to feel our culture and the climate of our society internationally, largely, is in great need of female, feminine energy, a nurturing, loving, warmth. And someone said the other day, like regarding terrorism, all terrorism's caused by men. Like, if you want to put it down to any one thing, it's men.
Yeah. It's the power of the mind. I think the man is the mind, the power of, you know, our thinking. I think that's what the male energy usually uses. And the woman uses the heart, which is, you know, the compassion. Mm. In, you know, we have 99 names for God in the Quran.
Cool.
And one of the names is Ar-Rahim. Ar-Rahim is the womb, the most compassionate.
Yeah.
You know, Ar-Rahim in Arabic is the womb. So it's the most compassionate.
Beautiful.
And we need compassion in these times. We need so much compassion for each other. And I think we can only have these compassions when we visit each other in our realities.
Right.
Because not two people live in the same reality.
That's so true.
Yeah.
And but how do we not fight darkness, but like shine light on darkness? And how can we awaken? Like my mate Johnny Pollard does a really good job of it because he can have a conversation directly with someone that is maybe in darkness. And he's done it with me when I'm in darkness.
Yeah.
And just pull out your heart. And that's what I feel like people like Donald Trump need, or anyone that's really destroying a lot of beautiful things that are so precious and sacred about this life, nature, people's dignity, all this stuff. You know, how can we go out tomorrow? How can people listening go out tomorrow and really make actual change in their world to empower or inspire how beautiful and wonderful we are, others are inside?
Yeah. I think we can find that in when we find the beauty within ourselves first and foremost. And I think we cannot, you know, I have a ritual that I do create my day every morning before I leave my home. And by that, I mean, it's just taking that simple step when you wake up in the morning, instead of recycling what you had, the problems and things like you had yesterday, you can take a moment to just meditate or have, like, for us, we do, you know, we have prayers, early morning prayers. And so after prayers, I also meditate. And it's in that meditation, I know what our world is like today. And I know that I'm going to go out there. And I know that there's going to be a lot of responsibilities. There's going to be a lot of things that will call me out of who I truly am. And so I forgive, or I do the planning from that moment to send my energy, my loving energy, because at that time I'm so quiet and everything is so peaceful and I'm so loving. So at that space, I send out love. I send out love not
Man,
to
you're
only,
the best.
we can learn. We can learn to do that. But I love to do that, really. So I send out my love to the day, and I send out my love to everywhere in the world, all the people that I... And I make a lot of gratitude. I have a few friends that I use. We send each other gratitudes every morning. And so we write 10 things we're grateful about. So once you write those things that you're grateful about, I think your energy already starts to, you know, heighten up. Yeah. And so once you go out in that space, I think
you're armed.
Yes. You connect with people and you see them for who they are. You visit them in that reality that they're at. Even if they're angry, you just know that it's not you that they're angry at, but it's something in them. And when... You know, you love, that weakness. And I have a lovely thing. I'm writing a book at the moment called Love, Trust and Connect. So my love is an acronym. And the first L for that love is listen. So we need to become deep listeners. Listen, and then observers as well.
Yeah.
The second word is observe with no judgment.
Yeah.
And the third one is validate, emotion. Energy in movement, the last E.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what's the validation part?
The validation, you validate emotion.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so listen, observe and validate emotion.
Okay.
The energy in movement.
So really feel or connect.
Feel, So if I'm listening, whatever is happening to me, if I listen and if I observe and if I validate that emotion that is going through, I've loved.
Yeah.
I've loved myself.
Yeah.
And that emotion will tell me what it is.
Yeah.
And imagine loving someone across you when they're angry. Imagine validating that emotion, that anger. And
you mean because you're acknowledging it? Yeah, well, that's so true.
So you're listening, you're observing, and you're validating their anger.
Yeah.
So you've loved them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's
so that's
awesome.
What it is. Yeah.
I really like that.
Yeah. So,
so this is the book you're reading?
Yeah, the book I'm writing at the moment. So it's important that we really love each other. And the word love now, you know, everything, we've made everything cliche. You say, you know, love, what does she mean? You know, you can't, and it's so simple.
Yeah.
It's just simple. It's just acknowledging the other. And Jesus told us that.
But just to interject, you're making it relevant again by saying this is the process of what loving in this day and age is.
So
I think that's pretty powerful.
It's listening.
Yeah.
Well, you know, we've lost our listening skills.
But truly listening is to hear and to see.
To feel,
And feel.
We're listening for energy. There is a space which is beyond just language. You know, if I am a speaker and a storyteller, so when I go into an audience, like a room full of 150 or 200 people, I'm not talking to them. I'm talking with them. And actually, they're more powerful because their energy of listening is more powerful than the telling.
Yeah.
So it affects my telling. And if I go there and I just, you know, want to talk at them, there's nothing will happen. But sometimes, you know, outside of that conversation, people come to me and hug me and say, you've touched something. Or they just connect through my story what was in it for them. Because this is it's a space. So these I call compassionate conversations. And I think it's about connection, you know? So it's my book is Love, Trust and Connect.
Yeah, that's so cool.
So it's you start loving and you start trusting each other. Once that love happens, then the trust comes in.
Yeah.
And then you connect. So it's so powerful.
It's so, powerful. And I feel like a really important thing that you said is starting your day, for me, meditation, but starting your day essentially in a place that, you know, you're cleaning the slate or you're saying, what's the world like today? Starting the day coming into the deepest part of yourself and being aware of your conditioning or aware of your hurts or aware of the fears in you that could potentially make you operate from an unloving place.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so by doing that, you're totally loving and acknowledging yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
So you can up for others.
Absolutely. And you know what? The magic that will happen for you is incredible. Because you'll start to notice simple things. The simplicity of life, like a flower growing just next, you know, outside of your window. Or, you know, the bird singing. You can hear all that. Your senses become hyper to what is happening outside because you've already connected. And it's just starting your day with connecting with life. And life is everything. I mean, even the bed you're sleeping on or even the chair you sit on is alive because the person who made it had, you know, that's an information.
They've transferred their consciousness into it.
Their consciousness into it. And it has a sort of an information for you, you know. It tells you something and it's you can feel all that. So once we start having that conversational, and going back to David White, the conversational nature of reality, it all intertwines.
It's also fluid, isn't it?
It's fluid and it's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. And you start learning how to appreciate, you know, you appreciate life and you appreciate others. You appreciate everyone, like, you know, from the breakfast you eat because it's got a lot of things that other people have made and you feel the love, you know, of all these things that have come together for you. Yeah. I was in the traffic this morning and I loved it. I was like, wow, look at, you know, all these cars going to work and everybody, you know, I wonder, you start wondering what everybody's stories is and you have time to look around because I came through the lake view in, you know, Albert Park and it was so beautiful and I was like, wow, we live in an incredible, you know.
You're amazing. Like, honestly, you're just like a beam. Your face is an actual, like, light beam that just, like, spits out or, like, radiates this just love. Like, your eyes just hold this energy that feels so pure and so, shooting out of you.
Yeah. And it's there for all of us. I see it that is. In you as well, Jeremy. Yeah. So it's beautiful. When we learn to appreciate each other that way, I know that, you know, this is a beautiful, we're in a beautiful orchestra.
Yeah, we are. And that's what we briefly chatted the other day about is acknowledging or saying how beautiful the diversity is, you know, and how the different choices, the different faiths, the different beliefs, the different facets of creation.
Yes.
Because it all is manifested from the same field.
Absolutely.
And so celebrating the difference, there's a lot in that, isn't there?
There's so much in that. Yeah. I mean, diversity is everything. I mean, imagine a world void of diversity, you know? It would be boring, wouldn't it?
Oh, man.
Just go on a table of a parfait table and look at all the food of different, you know, your fruits. It gives you choices. And it's beautiful. I mean,
it's all colors of the rainbow and it's almost like... It's almost somehow with what you're saying and what you're acknowledging and witnessing is that, like, love is the glue between all of the diversity. Because love transcends. Happiness and joy and laughter transcends no matter what path or any of that diversity.
Yeah.
Doesn't it connect? Isn't it that wonderful?
It does. And it's just, It's incredible. I don't even know, you know, the feeling is different from the explanations. I don't think we have enough words to describe what it feels like.
Well, you got 99 for God, so that's a start.
Yeah. So it's the feeling is just so incredible. And if we can take each other in that feeling, like when you're listening to a comedian, you know, making you laugh. Or you listen to an academic, you know, telling you exactly what a certain thing has been and the way the process that it has come through. Or you just see someone making, for instance, if I take you through my samosas, making a samosa and the way I do it, like food, it's incredible. So it's all this, it's all fascinating for our mind. And you know, I have created for myself, which I'm really feel truly humbled that I can go to different, like today I'm with you here in this, you know, talking about this. And tomorrow I might be just simply sitting in my garden with a few women telling stories. And, you know, so having those different kinds of experiences is just amazing.
It's what makes life so rich.
It is. It is so rich. Our life is so rich.
And that's,
if we're not fearful.
Yes.
Yeah. If we're willing to take the risks.
Yeah.
And to just, you know, this is what I like. How about if I exploit instead of thinking about how can I do it and where is it going to come from? And all the questions that come up in your mind. Yeah. If we learn to take risks, if we learn to just open up and say, this is what I would like. I wonder how I could go, you know, go through this.
Powerful. Like, obviously, you're in a very embodied state of that, but for some and for and we're always growing, and I'm sure there's areas in your life where you're it's where you're shifting and shining light on your own darkness in little ways, and that process is always a little bit uncomfortable. It's always uncomfortable. And it's always, it tends to be awkward, and it tends to be, you can sometimes offend people.
Yeah.
You know that interesting process space of shifting into love? Like, you know, I'm just trying to think of a real life example, but I think you know what I'm trying to talk about.
I know, and I don't think that we have it. Like, okay. Like today I can't be this bubbly and I have it all together and all that. And then another day I might hear some news and I'm just into a depression and all that. But I think this is the two things. Like I love the poet Rumi.
Yeah.
And Rumi specifies this for me in a very beautiful way. And he says, beyond ideas of wrongdoing and right doing, there's a field. I'll meet you there. And so I think the wrongdoing and right doing is part of our duality. It's part of the polarity of life. And being a gardener and living in, you know, watching and observing nature, nature isn't afraid of polarity. Nature accepts that. One day it's shining and the sun is out. The next day it's we call it gloomy or it's dark. Nature doesn't mind.
It doesn't judge. It doesn't judge.
It doesn't go, you know, it's just...
I miss you.
It's part of life.
Yeah.
And for us, it's the same. You know, we're so happy today, but something could go wrong and we have families, we have people we love, and nothing is guaranteed. Something will go wrong. That is for sure.
Yeah.
So if we're prepared for that, and when we're grieving, we're okay with that. And when we are loving, we are loving. And we can, you know, we can choose. And it's about the choices. Do I grieve longer? It's your choice. You can. Or do I get out of it? I can. So it's just learning.
I mean, that what you've hit on then is the exact point of turn or the exact point of process, out of it or staying in it.
Or staying in it.
And
there's no right and wrong. And there's no, you know,
it's your choice. That's what makes it wonderful.
It's choice.
Yeah.
It's unique to the individual. And, you know, if the, you know, my 18-year, my daughter, youngest daughter turned 18. And she was, you know, that day complaining to me, nobody loves me. And she was a young drama queen. And she goes, no one loves me. And this is happening. And da-da. And I said, well, Sarah, my darling, you know, I have had, life has been, for me, it's like I've gone through a lot of darkness and suppressions and all that. Mm. And I'm not ready to, I am on my way to thriving.
Mm.
If you want to come along, I'm here for you. And I will always be here for you, even if you want to stay in this darkness. So it's your choice. So I think it's okay to give your children or you choices to say, yeah, you can stay here. It's okay.
Yeah.
But I'm not gonna be here with you.
Yeah.
And I don't wanna hear about it. So go to someone else and complain.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
That's so empowering, because that's responsibility and power.
Yeah.
Empowerment is
I don't want to listen to your negativities, and I don't want to listen to the, just, you know, you can be here. It's your choice.
Yeah.
But, you know, whenever you need me, I'm up there.
Yeah.
And I think that's what our sort of our inner beings, so who we truly are, tells us, I'm here for you.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I recognize that.
The light is here.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whenever you want it.
That's true.
It's here.
That's
so
really
it's
true.
Up to you to come back to it and find it.
That's so true. And when you haven't got someone else to acknowledge it, to acknowledge it in yourself. I found this, you know, often in my own darkness, I've felt like I've been alone in the desert. But then it's been this subtle, quiet voice that says either you're not alone or just to acknowledge what's going on. And the minute I acknowledge the fear and look at the fear and go, oh, that's what you are, it disappears.
It's
honestly like having a beam out my eyes. It's light. And as soon as I truly look at the fear right in it, it dissipates.
It dissipates.
And it's, oh, where'd you go?
And I think it's, for me, it's I've seen this in phases. And we do live in these phases. Every time we're growing, I think we come into these three phases.
Right.
So the first phase is victimhood.
Right.
You know, poor me.
Yeah.
And that's where sometimes we can spend a little bit of time of, you know, indulging in that poor me.
Yeah.
And then you can, when you move from it, you find yourself in a space of anger.
Right.
Because I don't think you can go from that depression to the light straight away. You've got to take the steps. It's like you're learning to walk again. So you go to this space of anger. And anger is so much better than being a victim. Because anger, you get to say, you get to blame others.
Yeah.
It's like, it's your fault. And it's, you're angry. And that's where activism, you know, you're activist. And like,
it's a release of energy.
It's a release of energy. And it's distressing.
Yeah.
So if you're lucky and you move to the third space, is the space of empowerment.
Yeah.
Of going, I take responsibility.
Yeah.
I don't want to be, I don't
because
want
the anger
anymore.
And the fear is both mine.
It's both mine. And I don't want to indulge in it anymore.
Yeah.
So I am going to this space of, you find yourself in taking responsibility.
It's almost like we don't feel loved. And then we go, it's your fault out there. Yeah. Oh, wait a minute. No, it's my fault.
It's my fault. And yes. Coming back again to
coming
the light.
Back. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So you, when you take that full responsibility, your life literally lightens up because you cut all the bad, all the things that you've been, it's like climbing Mount Everest and having all these backpacks and you cut it all out and you're like, okay, yeah, now I can walk.
Oh, you feel that.
So
I can relate to that.
Yeah.
That feeling of you're walking on clouds or you're walking above your body.
Yeah.
And it's because you've got all your weeds out of you.
Yeah. And I think those three phases are phases of growth.
Mm.
You know?
And they're going to come back.
They're going to come back. Because when you come to a new height, it's like, okay, you come back to the victim. Oh, who am I to have this or this?
And that's what's so beautiful about life is that we're continually evolving. Acknowledging that continual evolution is one that makes you go, all right, well, there's no destination. And I've been tricking myself thinking there was, you know.
Absolutely. There is no destination. And I don't ever think that our work will be done in this world. And I don't even know if we've come here to do some work.
Maybe we're misguided.
Yeah, maybe we're misguided. I think we've just come here to play and to have fun and, you know, it's there's no work. I mean, and you really know that when you're in, you find your purpose.
Yeah.
You know, when you find your purpose, I think it's just, it's incredible because you're driven by passion, you know. And for me, it's like, I usually know, like when I don't have clarity, because it starts with clarity. When you have clarity of what is it that I want, that's where it starts.
Mm.
Find clarity. The minute you have clarity, it gives you passion. And passion is the fuel that, you know, pours into your purpose. You straight away know that this is, oh, I love doing this. This is my purpose.
Yeah.
And that purpose is nothing else than being a service to humanity.
Isn't it funny? You know? That's the common thing.
It is. It is being in servicehood. Yeah. Servicehood to humanity.
And that's the part of the interdependency, isn't it?
Yeah, it is the interdependence, but it's also about autonomy. It's about, you know, becoming that autonomous being.
Mm.
You know, you're free in that space. You're free from, you know, that whatever happens, you can earn your living.
Mm.
If you don't like your job, you can quit.
Mm.
You know, you can find that space of I am autonomous. I am
powerful.
Yes, I am able to find my food. And I think birds and animals, they demonstrate that every day.
They're so independent.
They're so independent.
Except lorikeets, they hang out with their partners all the time.
And, and I think that's where self-leadership comes from. And once you reach that space of self-leading, it's like, that's it. You don't need to be held, you know, in the darknesses. I think we're in the darknesses because we are power playing with others, and our power is sort of taken. We feel that our power is taken away from us. No one can ever take our power away from ourselves, and we have incredible stories.
Why it's called play, because I'm trying to play it. Playing with it.
It is. Someone else will just manipulate that power, and you realize that because you know all the things that build up to that, and you go, okay, I'm not part of this. I don't want to play this game.
Mm.
Yeah,
you haven't noticed my power play, but I've been on a seat that's higher than yours the whole interview.
Only we can see eye to eye because I'm taller than you. No,
that's just beautiful, Mariam. Yeah. I love your energy. I love everything that you
thank
give.
You,
I feel, thank you for your time. And honestly, I feel like it's a real gift to just have your presence in a room and to have your attention. I feel like lucky, you know.
Wasn't it powerful that you invited me to do this talk, and then we meet, and it's like, oh, Jeremy, I didn't even know your face, but I knew it was you. It was like, oh, Jeremy,
it's awesome,
incredible. That is synchronicity. I mean, it's just, it happens to me all the time. I talk to someone, it's like, it's when you allow, because there's an incredible system within us that tells us everything. How did we even forget about that? Because we drink a glass of water and we don't even worry about how it's going to be, you know, processed. And that's, you know,
we forget
everything in life is supposed to be that way.
It's all
when you need to go and meet someone, it's just like you going, you know, I need the toilet.
That's cool.
It's just like that. You know,
sometimes we meet people in the toilet.
Sometimes you meet the people that you need to talk to in the toilet. So it's just like, it's a system that tells you, when I need something, I have this desire, just put it out into the universe. I have this desire.
Yeah.
And I need to, you know, to realize this. And just let it go.
Mm.
Don't become that, you know, sick but who asks again and again, oh, yeah, I need this, I need this, I need this.
Yeah.
Yeah, so.
That's actually really good, relevant for something I'm going through at the moment, actually. It's like I was really wanting something to make something happen, and then I realized it's just not.
Yeah.
So do I chase it or do I just let go?
Just let go and allow it, you know. It's our main thing is just allowing it. Because if that thing is supposed to come to you, it will. And maybe there's something that better is coming to you.
I think so. There
who
is.
Knows? Yeah. So just have that faith and trust. Again, it comes back to trust.
Yeah.
Have the trust and allow. And most of it's so incredible for me because, you know, as a speaker, I really don't even do a lot of marketing. I just, you know, people just like, oh, I had you on radio, or I had this. Could you do this? And because I just, it's employing energy. It's just learning to use energy. And the amazing thing is, it's both in the Quran and in the Bible, how the teachers who came to teach us, like Prophet, for us, we call him Suleiman, but his name in Christianity, I think, Solomon, King Solomon, used to manipulate energy. And he used to talk about the things that now we talk about, like, you know, quantum physics and quantum mechanics and all those things. It was the power of using energy at its best.
Jeez, it's been around for a long time. Even Nikola Tesla, he said everything's vibration. Everything's
vibration
frequency.
And frequencies, and we're just transmitters and receivers. And once you learn those things, it's you're set for life to play.
Yeah, man, you're the best. I want you on every episode that we do from now on.
Oh, that's lovely.
No, but that's me clinging on to you.
Yeah, I'm honored. I feel like I could be here every day.
No, thank you so much, Mariam. That was a real
Jeremy.
Pleasure, and I feel very humbled and thankful.
Thank you. Thanks.